My name is Gianni Russo, a.k.a. Carlo, the infamous son-in-law from The Godfather. I'm now known as the Hollywood Godfather, and this is my story.
Before all of the wins in my portfolio, I was a little boy diagnosed with polio. Experimenting with cures, I tried every one. Felt everything in my right, but my left was numb. Walking with a limp, like will I ever run? Once again, or is this it? Am I forever done? Living in the hospital was never fun. Some people were cool, but not everyone.
Welcome, everybody. It's time for another Hollywood Godfather, fortunately. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you're listening to us. Our plea, basically, it is. We want more followers. We need more subscribers. We have an opportunity we can't share with you. If we're almost there, we may go network and phone-ins, which is the next step for us. So be loyal to us. We'll be loyal to you.
Yeah.
Let me bring the lady in first, if we can, please. Jeannie Raymond, coming from
Utah. Hi, everyone.
I like
that. Yes. In here and from Utah, very close to Salt Lake City, and absolutely thrilled to be here. So nice to see both of you.
And our new co-host, the Hollywood Kid.
My man. So, yeah, thank you, guys. Another great show. We had a great show last week with Jamie Duvall. We talked about the Krista Helm murder. Before that, we talked about the Black Dahlia murder. So there's a lot of crimes. I know Jeannie is a big true crime nut junkie. So we're going to try to cater to her in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but the thing is, let's talk about those crimes, you know. Here's a guy that dedicated his life, Mr. Duvall.
Yeah.
For years.
Nothing for free.
I hope he's listening. He better find another thing to amuse himself. He's going to spin his wheels. You're never going to solve these crimes.
You know what happens? I've interviewed a ton of authors and, people that have passed away. Obviously the person was murdered and they become, sometimes it gets a little bit too much. It becomes a fascination with the person that was murdered. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I could understand that.
You know, I have heard of so many of these cases after 20, 30 years. And you wonder if those people are always, looking over their shoulder or if they've kind of think, oh, hey, I got away with this and think they're in the clear. And then all of a sudden, someone finally speaks out. And so many podcasts have been part of new things kicking up and then being solved. So I wish him the best of luck, yeah. The daughter Nicole, and hopefully
that's similar to the gentleman we had on last week. He did an investigation,
right.
Only to find out his father did the crime.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that's up on the YouTube channel, Jamie Duvall, the murder of Krista Helm. That was a 48 hours expose. That's how I was turned on to it. I started doing a little deep dive, and I saw Jamie. And I, got hooked up with him. And, but again, if you know anything about that murder happened in 1977, maybe people back then, they don't want to talk. They were strung out back then. Now they're getting older.
Hey, they're on their dying bed and they want
to get sick, whatever. They want to get something off their chest. Get in touch with Jamie Duvall. And that's a fascinating.
Or Jeannie.
Yes, definitely write into us at the Hollywood Godfather. If you look on our show page, our show notes, you can look on there and there's ways to reach out to us. You can either email us each individually or you can send a question to everyone at the Hollywood Godfather podcast on our webpage. So definitely, absolutely. If you've got any tips on that.
Speaking of reaching out, somebody reached out to me on the Hollywood Godfather podcast.com, a gentleman, he wanted to know, what is our opinion? What's going on with all these YouTube mob wars per se? The genre itself. If anybody out there is not familiar with what's going on, it's pretty much like an adult soap opera. It really is.
To me, I wanted to stay away from it, but it's inevitable. We can't, because our own audience is getting wrapped up in it. And as you pointed out, tonight in itself. You said a guy who's incarcerated, the head of the Bonomo family, is sending a message out to his,
messages. This is like, you can't make this up, Jenny. He's sending out messages to his, you know, his associates, etc., saying nobody is to go on social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and talking about the life. Isn't that, for me, that's hilarious.
Well, the only reason with me, my reputation early on around people like Costello and Ocado, and the man who I thought was really my uncle, Carlo Gambino. I mean, this is unheard of.
Right.
First of all, and I laugh because I mentioned it a couple of times. These people are actually talking about taking the oath.
Yes.
And nobody knew what that oath was. And I can elaborate on it now because I'm not the one that disclosed it. But I don't know how many people know this. When you're brought into that life, you have a guy who's, we call him the rabbi, but he's basically who's sponsoring you, like O'Neill De La Croca and different people like that. And I know a lot of guys that were made, and they knew from the far beginning that, you know, I didn't want anything to do with it. I was associated as business or doing favors. I was a messenger for Frank Costello. I never was part of that thing, but I knew a lot about it. The thing I did know about it, which confused me most, is that oath. How do you, a father, a son, a husband, take an oath? And, you know, it's almost barbaric because you have to have your patron saint, which happened to be mine being Saint Anthony. And they tell you to bring your patron saint with you, whatever it is, and your sponsors are there, and they have their hands on your shoulder, and you're taking this oath where you're denouncing your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters, your children, your wife. Why in your right mind would you do that? into a family that will kill you in 2 seconds.
I mean, Johnny, what's the new initiation now? They burn the saint in your hand and say, do you promise not to open up an Instagram account?
I know. I mean, what is this about? That's why I like, you know, skinny Joe. I mean, he's taking residence in Florida, as I assume, but we can't get away from it.
Yeah, he's the hot property right now. Everybody's going after.
I know. But the thing is that what I like about him, he's telling all these rats that they are.
He's calling them out. He's calling them, he's gonna rat of the month, rat of the week.
I know. I mean, and he says it. I'm laughing because, you know, I know some of the people that talk about, you know, obviously I knew about Sammy the Bull. I met him once or twice with John, and John and I weren't really friendly, but we knew each other just because of him being at the Ravenite. And O'Neill was very close to me, and he was John's rabbi.
It's funny, Johnny, is because when he calls out a rat, the other guy had, the guy he's calling out has a YouTube channel, right? And yes. He says, oh, Joey Merlino, he's full of shit. And this, and he goes, then the next week he comes out with a 302. I'm full of shit. Here, this is yours, right? This is your writing, right? You signed off on this. So it's like an adult soap opera, it really is.
No, but
the guy, a
302, Johnny, I mean, you know more than what it is than I do. Right. The FBI, when you sit down with the FBI and you start basically.
Okay. And the guy he's talking about, I mean, there's so many facts against him of what it's known facts. There's a book out about his father called Sonny, and it definitely describes that he has a mother and father before Sonny went out with the mother. And he's saying, no, he's my blood father.
Yeah.
And the blood brother of the lady and Sonny, they had a child later, he became a rat and stooled down his own father and put him back in jail. I mean, this is so...
It's unbelievable what you see every week. I mean, it's must-see TV. It's like watching The Sopranos, appointment television.
But I think that's what it's becoming a version of.
Yeah.
Because they're all on there. I mean, Sammy the Bull is sitting around like he did nothing in his life. Sammy the Bull killed a lot of people. The thing that bothered me most about him, and I'm thankful for the governor of Arizona, because when he and his family got into an ecstasy thing going on with his children while he was in the witness protection program, he thought he was untouchable. Well, the governor said, he's in my state poisoning kids and killing kids. I'm going after him. And he did.
Yeah.
And the federal government, there was nothing they could say about it. But, I mean, and now he's sitting around with a hat on and glasses and the worst plastic surgery I ever saw in my life. And he's Patrick Bet-David. There's a guy who's a legitimate guy. I know this guy. I knew his family before when they came here from Tyron. And he's a self-made billionaire. And he's infatuated with these guys.
Yeah, he's he has a lot of
these shows.
It's, you know, it's, you know, they're getting ratings. They're getting views. That's what it's all about on YouTube anyways. They're getting views.
You know, the funniest thing is that we were all, and the world has always been fascinated with the mob. James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart. That's even before it was exploited the way it is. But they were in motion pictures, but everybody, they made careers. I mean, I spent so much time with you know, especially certain guys. And when he went to London, he was hosting the club over there. And I went over a lot to hang out with George Raft. This guy was like, you know, he was a great guy. Oh. But now, I mean, it's and now they're all yelling at each other.
Yeah.
It's calling each other out. He's a liar. No, he's a liar.
Liar. This
one thing I really appreciated Molino doing. He's got the documents.
Yeah, he's got all the paperwork. He got the 302.
Got the paperwork. And he wasn't a rat.
Right. He's what he. But the funny thing about YouTube and the way it works, so all these rats are getting out there, and they're, you know, they're building up their subscribers. And here comes Merlino. He's telling, he's giving facts, and he's giving you documentation. And YouTube wants to take him off the channel. They want to take him off.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I mean, again, we talked about YouTube. YouTube's like a channel on television.
Right. If
you can't swear on there. Can't swear on TV. They don't want you swearing on YouTube either. But Merlino, every word out of his mouth is FFFFF. He said, I'm not changing my face. This is how I talk. So YouTube says, you know what? We're going to flag you. So now he's going to like Patreon, which is a pay.
Oh, I didn't know any of that. But I thought they wanted to take him off because he was killing the ratings of their other shows.
Yeah, you never know. That could be it too.
That's it. When it hurts their pocketbook,
they're
going the other way. But I mean, you know, it's so... It's insane. And I can't believe that we're talking about this inmate and the Bonanno family sending out a message.
Yeah.
I mean, who in the world would ever think somebody would send out a message to made guys or part of their crew, don't go on YouTube or don't go on social media.
Nobody on Facebook. Everybody off Facebook. You know what I mean?
They've forgotten that it's a secret.
Yeah, they forgot.
Oh, yeah, that's all over with.
Yeah, we talk about secret. Look at a guy like Meyer Lansky, Joe Bonanno. They never went to jail because they never talked.
No.
Right.
These guys are blasting it everywhere. It's amazing.
And, you know, it's funny because talking about Sonny Francesi, I fortunately was a friend of his, true friends. And then when he came out, the last few years of his life, he was 103 when he died. You know that, Jeannie? 103. No.
Crazy.
That's in Italian blood.
But you know what's interesting about him? He never ratted on anybody. And that was his legacy. He got in early in the 30s.
50 years. 50 years, he never ratted.
I know.
Amazing.
At the time. And his stepson and his son rat him out.
Well, Johnny, let me ask you this. Obviously, I think I know the answer, but what would you think about all the former godfathers are all gone now, heads of the family, they're all dead. What would they'd be rolling over in their graves? What do you think they'd be saying?
But they wouldn't be saying anything. They'd be sending cars.
Take care of business.
They're not saying nothing. There'd be a lot of guys.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, you know, I was in Sicily in October, and they're laughing at this. They're really not laughing. They're annoyed at it and saying, what the hell is going on? I mean, we've watched, and I'm writing a new book on it now in the 60s and 70s. We watched how the federal government infiltrated Vegas. And how they did it was interesting because Howard Hughes, who was basically an aircraft, Hughes Aircraft and all that, he got a contract from the federal government during the Vietnam War, the helicopters. And they gave him the exclusive contract for this with the understanding, the profit, he starts buying up casinos in Vegas. That's nuts. They're not allowed in free enterprise. The whole world has gone crazy.
It really is.
And there was a time with it. And there was, I mean, I read documents that Lyndon Baines Johnson kept that war going because they needed to buy more hotels. The first hotel they bought was the stupidest hotel in the world, the Landmark. Then they started buying the Desert Inn, the Caesars. I mean, not Caesars, the Sands. They were the big hotels. But then who were running this was Bill Dana, a CIA guy, Bob Mayhew, Walter Kane. Walter Kane was the lover of Howard Hughes. Nobody even knew this when Hughes had the studio. He brought him in as entertainment director. And I knew all this, and I'm saying to myself, what the heck's going on? My biggest problem was because in the 60s and 70s, I was buying the Marcus, the Morg Marcus. And I don't know if did we talk about this ever?
I've heard it. But I've been stalking you a long time, Gianni. I know your story, but
I was buying the Marcus that they were not allowed to go into state to collect. See, what people don't realize, the citizens of Nevada recognize gaming on a referendum and voted for it, like Atlantic City and now like Boston, a lot of other cities, because they couldn't legalize gaming just for one state. It would be unconstitutional. So you have to recognize it. What they didn't realize is that once you sign a marker in a casino for $10,000, $15,000, $50,000, you can't go collect it into state because you created the vice. So there was, when I got involved with bringing the skim with Nick Nitti and I, we were bringing the skim out of certain families, Chicago, Kansas City, New Orleans, and New York, which was my guy, Frank Costello. But, you know, it was a situation where we saw a wall and it said the morgue on it. And it took me months before I even asked. And I said to Milton Frank, actually, he was the head of the cage, and he's long gone. That's the only reason I'm mentioning his name. But Milton Frank was the head of the casino then, the cage, and the count room. And I said, Milton, what's with this morgue? He said, oh, these are markers we can't collect, but we keep them because the guy ever comes back in, we'll grab them. And I was thinking about it. I said, why can't you go? He said, we're not allowed to go interstate. He signed a marker to here. So I said, listen, I'd like to option some of these markers. If you do, why? I said, I think I could collect them. And I did. I came up with an idea. First, I started with California. So I created a finance company in California, legal company. Got that stationery, got a checking account, and I optioned them for 90 days, and I would buy them at 25 cents on the dollar. So if you owed $10,000, $2,500, I owned it. So when I started it into it, I came up with the idea, give me everybody starting with DR in the alphabet. Forget the A's and the B's. Give me DR. And they looked at me. They were all doctors. They ain't mob guys. I had every dentist in L.A., every doctor in L.A. that owned any money. So I go see Louis Dragna, who was the boss of L.A. I said, Louis, I got an idea. I could expand in the Shylock business, and we don't put any money up. He said, how's that? I told him, he says, that's brilliant. I'm in. Because what I needed one of his guys to go to these doctor's appointments with me. I would actually make a doctor's appointment. Go with my guy. And when the doctor came in with the nurse, I'd say, doctor, can you tell the nurse to go outside? We got some business to talk to you. Now he's got the guy against the door and me talking to him. I take his marker out. I said, I bought your marker. And a lot of these guys like almost start crying. I said, you got no problem. Don't worry about it. You don't have the money. He's my wife, didn't even know I was there. I said, I ain't worried about all that. I want to work with you, but you owe me the money now. I said, first of all, you got to get together at least 25% of it. So I know you'll be faithful. And the rest, I'll put on a marker for you. And you pay him. He's going to come every week. You pay him 2%. Now, 2% on 10,000, that's, do the math, a lot of money. But so this went on. So I organized California. Then I went to Arizona. Then I started branching out. In years to come, I had millions and millions of dollars. All the mob loved me because they were getting 1 point. They had nothing up. I was getting 1 point. I didn't even show up. When I'd see them, they gave me envelopes of money. Costello said to me, how did you figure this out? But why I'm bringing it up, I had a tremendous interest of not letting Howard Hughes and them come in. I wanted to slow that wheel up.
Yeah,
I was able to do it for 3 years. They wanted to get organized. I said, you got to win them over. And they brought cocktail waitresses in that are FBI agents. I mean, the federal agents that were in Vegas during the 60s to the 70s, and that's when Howard Hughes was buying everything up. And how I found out about it, the man who negotiated the deal, this is the most interesting story because everybody never met Howard Hughes. The man who was the guy, I can't mention his name because he's still alive, and out of respect, I wouldn't do it. So he sold all these casinos. He was a mastermind. So he got a call to come down, want to negotiate. You got to negotiate the terms with Howard Hughes. So when he came into town, we had dinner. And I said, what time are you meeting Howard Hughes? He said, midnight. I said, what? He said, yeah, guy wants to meet me at midnight. I got to go over to Desert Inn Hotel. This story is unbelievable. So he gets there, they bring him up to Howard Hughes' suite, and they put him in a room. And they said, Howard Hughes will knock on that door when he's ready for you. Here's a pad and pencil, and you write everything down and pass it to him under the door, and he'll answer you back. He said, what do you mean? I'm not going to see him. He said, no, you don't see anybody. They sold the Sands Hotel $38 million and a $10 million loan by this process. It went on all night. Wow. And he'd be waiting, Mr. Hughes, I'm reading. That's how they sold that hotel. Why that was interesting to me, because he told me what they were going to do. And that's when I knew I got to slow this process down. Because I'm going to get, I'll get caught with all the, I mean, my money was no problem. But I didn't want it to stop. The greed in this was brilliant to have this kind of money out and you didn't have a dime up.
Amazing.
It was one of my better ideas.
Did Howard Hughes have any kids?
Supposedly he did. I don't know that. And, it was a situation where really nobody knew that much about him. I knew that, he somehow, some way, he got on a drip of morphine. And he was staying at the penthouse in Desert Inn. And when he was getting sick, they airlifted him back to Texas because they wanted him to die in his home state just because of what he owned. They didn't want him in Nevada and all that and everybody convoluting the sale. But I heard that he had a son, but I don't know if that's true or not. But he had great female lovers when he owned the studio.
Terry Moore.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, he really had a lust. Yeah.
I interviewed her. Yeah, she told me she was married to him. I don't know. That's what she said.
Oh, really? Tell us a little about that.
Well, she said she was married to him, and then she met him at a party or something, and they used to talk on the phone late at night, and he had like a something that would identify. Like back then, there was no, you didn't know who the hell was calling you.
Right.
So she would pick up the phone and he would make a, a noise like a turtle. And she looked at him. Yeah, you know, he's a widow. You
know, oh, yeah. No, I mean, talk about introverts. I mean, this guy was like I don't really know who did see him, but nobody said that they did.
Right.
This is interesting.
He had fingernails at the end, like 5 feet long. Yeah,
and long, long gray hair also.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Was it the drugs that sent him off to be weird?
He became a germaphobic early on. And then his handlers, like Bill Dana, Bob May.
They're all Mormons, right? They're all Mormons.
Yeah. And they controlled him. And then I don't know what was going on, but they started this morphine drip on him and hooked him up. And I mean, by the end, he had like 5 hotels.
Yeah. See what happens? There's like an Italian saying, when you got that kind of money, money's evil. They say money's evil. It even sticks on the saints. If you think about it, when you go to the feast, the money, they stick it on the saint.
Oh, yeah.
It's evil. See, that's what happens. You lose your mind. You go crazy. You got fingernails like this. Got a hit on his ass. I mean, the hell? Who got the money, Johnny? Who ended up with the money?
Well, it went to a lot of trust in the states. I mean, I don't know. Because, everybody says the same thing about Costello. And the only reason why I thought about this is because, and he taught me a lot of things, offshore corporations and all that. And that's what they did. Because, Joe Kennedy and Frank Costello, during Prohibition, they made $40 million each. That's like $4 billion each with that kind of money. I mean, he still owns buildings here. He owns 11 Wall Street. That's a whole corner.
Who, Kennedy? Joe Kennedy?
No, Frank Costello.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
And see behind me? This is one of his apartments I got as a gift in 73. Hello. He gave me 6 more. I rent out 4 and I live in 2 of them.
Wow.
But those guys were so smart.
Yeah.
And like you said, they kept their mouth shut. And the one thing I got to say, I never met a man. First of all, he became what I call my father. But every time I made a move, like when he had the meeting with Joe Kennedy, and because they were friends, and he wanted his son, John, who's the senator, to become president, he realized there's no way they're going to have a Catholic president. So he came to Costello and he said, here's what I will do. I need all the unions, all your mob friends to get behind my son and get him nominated. So I started traveling 59, 60, cultivating this. But every time I left, it's a lesson in life that I've never stopped. To this day, if I know I'm going to have a conversation with somebody that and I don't know, like my first major attorney at 17 was Sidney Korshak. Sidney Korshak got to be known as Mr. Fix-It, even for Steve Wynn, everybody else. So I'm flying into Chicago. I got an envelope. I meet him at the Waldorf. He says, you're going to meet this guy at the Palmer House. Give him this envelope. I get there, we walk in, and I don't even ask me how I remember this guy. The guy who picked me up at O'Hare was Frankie Ballesteri. Frankie Ballesteri became the shooter that killed Sam Gene Gatta.
Oh, my word.
I mean, the Ballesteri, bro. I mean, these things you can't even make up.
But that was, I thought it was Roselli, no?
No, Johnny Roselli didn't kill. No.
No.
Roselli was already dead.
Was he?
Roselli was dead. He was the shooter for
Johnny. Let me ask you this, Johnny. Who was the shooter for Bugsy Siegel?
Well, that's an interesting one because that was before me. That was in the 40s.
Yeah, 40s, yeah.
But Swifty brought him, Bugsy, to what was his girlfriend's name?
Oh, yeah, Virginia something, Wolf?
Yeah, Virginia Hill.
Virginia Hill, yeah.
No, but the interesting thing is that was another story I knew because of Costello. Because, we'd sit and talk and he'd reminisce. But when they sent Bugsy to Vegas to build the Flamingo Hotel. They went over budget, like $3 million, which was a lot of money in the 40s. But they found out that Virginia Hill was making trips to Europe, like they weren't going to find out. And they skimmed from them $2 or $3 million. Well, a lot of that money was Costello's money. So they gave him a chance because he had no luck at all. Forget about bad luck. He had no luck. When he opened the Flamingo Hotel, they were already $3 or $4 million over budget. He created this big party, bringing all the celebrities in, and there was a storm that closed down.
There was a monsoon.
So even in the opening night, he lost money.
I read somewhere, Johnny, I mean, you might know if this is true or not, but one of the people who put up a ton of money for the Flamingo was the guy who started the Hollywood Reporter. I don't know his name. I forget his name.
I'll tell you in a minute. I know the family. That's not true, though. That's not true.
No? Okay.
We give it a minute, Gianni, while you decide and do us a quick commercial. Make a little money while you're thinking it out.
Yeah, we'll be right back. And I'm going to do the commercial myself because I know this show airs before April 8th, 13th and 14th. I'm going to be in New Jersey. And it's PaisanoCon. Go on, find PaisanoCon. You'll get all the information. We're going to be at a hotel Saturday and Sunday. All your Italian friends are going to be there. And yeah, he mentioned Mike. Who's that kid from the Giants? That kid's name.
Tommy DeVito. Tommy Cutlets.
Yeah, Tommy Cutlets.
Tommy Cutlets.
I hope he comes back, this kid. He's
a good player. I don't know what happened.
Well, I don't know, but he was third string, wasn't he?
Then a couple picks. That's all right. He's got at least growing pains.
But anyway, everybody's going to be there. You like Italians. I'm going to be there. Come by, say hello. We got great photographs, stories, books, whatever you want to do. It's for 2 days. There's shows, food, everything there is. Go to PaisanoCon. Look it up. And be there. Thank you. We're back.
Fantastic.
Johnny, now that we're back, the guy's name, it just dawned on me, who started the Hollywood Reporter in 1930 was Billy Wilkerson.
Wilkerson family, yeah.
Wilkerson.
But, yeah, okay. He was a front.
Yeah, they needed somebody.
Well, no, because the owner, I know the guy in, a guy called Mickey Cohen. Do you ever hear that name?
Heard of him.
Yeah.
And Louis Dragna.
You ever hear of the two Tonys?
No.
The two Tonys with these two guys in Vegas, and they were shaking down mob hangouts, casinos. And we should do a show on them. It's interesting. They got killed. Both of them got killed. They walked into a hotel, one of the casinos in Vegas, where the mob owned them. And they got pictures of them and everything.
What year was this?
It's got to be in the 50s, maybe late 40s, early 50s. They were called the two, I can get the name, the two Tonys.
Yeah, they're two idiots. That's who they are.
Yeah, the two Tonys.
But the funniest thing, I mean, when you start to hear what happened, so they actually gave Bugsy the opportunity. And a guy called Swifty, Alan Smiley, rather, he was at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. He brought Bugsy to Virginia's house because they wanted her to see the assassination.
Wow.
And he bought the house for her in Beverly Hills. They're sitting in the summertime. Alan is sitting at the couch, Bugsy across, and the shooter sneaks in behind Alan outside. He's outside. Alan's on the couch, and he shoots over Alan's shoulder and shoots Bugsy in the eye. That's where What's-Her-Name got the idea to shoot Mo Green in the eye.
Oh, yeah.
Godfather.
Puzo.
Yep.
Wow.
So why they did that, they sat her down, the phone rings, and somebody tells her, you're on a plane tomorrow going to Switzerland. And bring me back my $3 million, or you're next. And she left and got the money.
Yeah, if you remember those old video, old black and white videos of her in the Senate committee hearings, and she's sitting there and they're asking all these questions. He says, I didn't see nothing. I don't know nothing. I was just going out with a couple of fellas. I don't know nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, it's, you know, it's.
Well, whoever shot him had a great shooter. It was a really good shooter. Really good shooter.
So let me get back to the story. So now I'm traveling to get the senator elected. I get picked up by Ballesteri. They take me to the Palm House. I go in the Palm House. I meet this man. He shakes my hand. He said, got an envelope? I said, yeah, I give him the envelope. He opens the envelope. He says, you know what this is? I said, no. And he takes a page out for me, page for him. He signs both of them. You sign here. And the wrapper was $10,000. He says, now you just retained me where client privileges to speak. I went to Kansas City. I went to New Orleans. I went everywhere. And every place I went, I had an attorney. That's how Costello took care of me.
Smart.
Because even if they were bugging these guys, they couldn't use it because I'm having conversation with my client privilege.
Right, right. Smart.
And they took care of me that early on. And it's funny because Jim Bianco, who was the lawyer for the Vatican and the Vatican Bank, Banca di Roma, his great-grandson right now is my lawyer in Liechtenstein. Is that why? I mean, it's so crazy. I never stopped doing the same thing. Because when I, and people should learn this as a lesson, don't open corporations like in Florida and all that. If you do, don't take them out of the lawyer's book. He can form them. You don't need to sign them over to you. So when they try, and you can get subpoenaed and say, I don't own this, I don't own that, you don't. Because until it's assigned to you, you legally don't own it. He could keep it forever. He's the registered attorney for the corporation. He doesn't have to disclose.
Amazing.
You know, there's a lesson in life here just from how I survived. Because you know, I've never spent a day in jail. You know, the handcuffs on. And they brought me in on, you know, it was all self-defense, but still they brought me in, read my rights, but you know, it's a funny thing. And now we have these guys.
Yeah.
All took this oath.
You know, the funny thing is, you know, guys, like people like me might watch a couple of the shows. You might watch a couple of the shows, but guess who else is watching? The FBI.
Of course. I can't believe that they're not going to violate themselves. A lot of these guys are on parole.
These FBI guys might sit there and go, this is incredible. They're coming to us, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But, you know, I know just from being in New York, all those organizations are really doing nothing now. If they're selling some drugs, which most of them are, unfortunately, maybe they got a Shylock business, a bookmaking business. They are not doing the business they used to do.
Well, you know, the government took everything away from them. Took away gambling, took away marijuana, took away drugs, took it all away.
Well, the RICO Act in itself took the houses away from them.
Yeah.
A lot of times guys would go to, I could do 10 years on my head because their wife was in a house, paid for. They were getting an envelope each week. These young kids weren't respecting nobody. And then they put the RICO Act in. That's why everybody started flipping.
Yeah.
Well, I paid my dues. I mean, I should be living a life of glory. Instead, I'm over here. And, you know, it's a situation.
He sneezed. I got 10 years. The guy next to me, he sneezed next to me. I got 10 years. Those two guys were Tony Brancato and Tony Trombino. They met their demise on August 6, 1951.
Wow.
Yeah, 1951. They were shaking down hotel run clubs, you know, casinos. They weren't very bright. They weren't very bright at all.
Although, I mean, you know, 51 is when it started the transition when the heavy guys came in.
Yeah.
So it's that's when Vegas. I got to Vegas in 1959. I was there 30 years. When I shot Lorenzo Morales' guy in my club, October 28, 1989.
89?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Crazy. 30 years.
Crazy. Well, the mob world and the mob life has obviously changed. It's everything's changed. There's no more, you know, like you said, there's no more, you know, cars blowing up here and there. But now, like I said, everybody's...
You know, you have the Russians, you got the Albanians, you got so many mobs on every street in New York. Now you don't need mobs. Now we got all migrants, six, seven guys in their teens.
Yeah.
Near as killers.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say one thing. I spent a lot of time in Sicily. A lot of time. I spent 2 or 3 times a year I go to Sicily. Don't ever think it's not alive and well in Sicily.
Yeah.
And they're quiet about it there, right, Gianni?
Still are, man. There's a guy running the whole thing, 98 years old. I love him.
It was a big trial in Italy last week. A couple hundred of them got convicted last week in Italy.
Yeah.
It's a big
deal.
They
didn't open up. They went in. No. Yeah. Oh, they took down a lot of the Gambino family.
Wow.
A lot of the Gambino.
They don't play games over there overseas. They don't play games. They kill the judges. They'll kill anybody.
But there was a guy 20 years ago. Talk about that. He knew where the judges got on the freeway. And even the prosecutors.
I think
up the freeway.
I think his name was Toto Reina.
Reina.
Toto Reina. He was a nut. Killed everybody.
Blew up the freeways.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The
police were going to go on. They thought they with their bodyguards and police on the trucks and all that.
Come meet the politicians would be giving speeches on a stage. They blow up. They shoot them all.
Yeah.
Who's going to say nothing? Everybody did this. I didn't see nothing.
I have a funny feeling, and I hope it doesn't happen, but I think it may. I think all these guys are going to go on a paid holiday to Sicily and never come back.
They don't mess around over there. They'll leave your body in the streets.
So there's no repercussions for all the... the tales they're telling out of school, so to speak. That's just
over there. They're the judge and the jury. They're the judge, the jury, and in the coroner.
Well,
the coroner.
We got a great show again, just talking amongst ourselves. We had Billy Forsythe was supposed to be our guest, but I don't know what happened to him. He's going to be at the
We'll come look for him.
Oh, no, he knows that. Well, he played me in a movie years ago. He actually played Johnny Russo in a movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. Good actor. Yeah, he's a good actor.
Good eye. But we just want to thank all you listeners. It's really important. We have something in the works. We need a little bit more following, subscribers, and you're going to be able to phone in to us live, spontaneous.
That's right. We need everyone to share.
All over the country, everywhere. You can be calling in from everywhere.
And I want to thank Jeannie, Raymond first. Mike, thank you so much, man. You brought so much to the show now.
We're
well-rounded.
I got a lot of useless knowledge, Johnny. I got to get rid of it. I got a lot of useless knowledge. You know? I got to cash in.
It's not useless. Cash in.
Go ahead.
No, but the thing is that this, as I was told, was a passion of yours as a kid. Yeah. That's how you got the name.
Yeah.
You watch movies. So that knowledge today, if you can capitalize on it, why not?
Absolutely.
So tune in to his show, Hollywood
Kid. That's right.
Yeah, subscribe. Subscribe to Real Talk with the Hollywood Kid. A lot of great stuff like I talk about all the time. It's on there. So you know, there's a Black Dahlia, there's Jamie Duvall's on there, there's a ton of murder stuff, but there's a lot of Hollywood celebrity interviews with the golden age actors, the new kids today. Forget about them. What are they going to tell me about who they act? Justin Bieber? But you know, who cares? You know, I want to hear about your act. Did a scene with like Johnny with Marlon Brando or Al Pacino? That turns me on. Other than that, you know, I got nothing to comment.
All right, well, thank you all, our audience out there.
Subscribe to the Hollywood Godfather podcast up on YouTube or on Instagram. Just Google it. Again, keep those questions coming. HollywoodGodfatherPodcast.com. We got a lot of good things coming up, a lot of great shows coming up down the road. And tell your family, tell your friends, tell all your enemies. to tune us in every Wednesday.
In fact,
that's
we
right.
got a mailbag show coming up soon. So
exactly.
get the mailbags in now, and you'll hear your requests, whatever they may be. We'll read them, and who knows? You may produce a show for us.
Who knows? Maybe
that's
we'll have
right.
If you're interesting enough, tell us what your passions are about film and mob genre stuff, and we'll have you on.
Yep.
You know?
That's
all
right.
Right.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
All right, my love. See you, Mike. See you next week.
We'll see you.
Thank you, everyone.
God bless.
And that was that. But I'll be back. No regrets, no complaints. Lived a life with no restraints. The little kid they all counted out, proved them all wrong, that's without a doubt. Laying there with my left side numb, 5-year bout with polio, but yes, I won. From standing on corners like, how many pens you want, to living in a bakery, then opening my own restaurant. Of course, I had some help along the way. Friends like Frank Costello that I miss each and every day. Things from many years ago still resonate.